loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Good afternoon and welcome to Breaking Bread. I am Mel, your host for the show. And here we are on another Tuesday after Martin Luther King Day. Hope everyone enjoyed the holiday. And now we're back. The routine is on and no holidays till, anybody know?
February,
President's Day. Great. Well, join me in welcoming our guest today. We have with us Jeff Bond, who is a renowned author of the book Deadly Harvest, and he'll be at the Palm Springs Public Library tomorrow night, and he's going to talk about his book and all of his interesting things. And also joining us is Felina Danelis, who is a life coach who looks at all sorts of things, including your health. So we're going to be talking about healthy things today, and also Julie Warren from the Palm Springs Library. Good to see everybody.
Hi, Mel. Yeah, thanks for having
good
us.
To be here.
Thanks, and Mel. So we're going to have a conversation. Feel free to join in, ask questions if I am missing anything or not asking the right question. But Jeff, let's start with you, because I just love what you're called.
Yes, I call myself an evolutionary lifestyle anthropologist, which is a bit of a mouthful, and I'm always happy when I get it out pretty perfectly right at the beginning, and we're the kind of people who study the origins of the human species, the kind of lifestyle to which we were naturally adapted, the understanding that we're now living with bodies and with brains designed for life back then. I also talk about how we know all this now, and it's all this is, of course, scientifically evidenced. And then how best to adapt our lifestyles in today's world so as to emulate this, if you like, ideal lifestyle that was designed for us by our evolutionary past.
So another word for you is a nutritional anthropologist, which I like that. I think people can relate to that.
It comes out much easier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And to be honest, I suppose the main focus on lifestyle changes that we need to do, or if you like, the mismatch between the way we live today and the way nature intended, is largely focused on the fuel we put into our bodies, the food supply. So nutritional anthropologist, yes, that kind of covers 70% of what I talk about. But of course there are other lifestyle aspects, the physical activity. Yes, most people in the West are suffering physical activity deficiency. The body expects it to be there, and when it isn't, things go wrong. It expects sunshine to be there, and when it isn't, things go wrong. And so forth with stress patterns. You know, we're designed to react to certain kinds of stresses, but in today's world, we have all sorts of other things giving us stresses and keeping us in almost a continuous state of chronic stress in ways that our brains were never designed to handle. So I talk about all this kind of thing too.
So how do we deal with it, or how do we change it?
Well, this is what you need to come along and hear my talk tomorrow evening in the Palm Springs Library, where I will be going over all this. Inevitably, it's only 1 hour, and I could easily fill a week of this information.
Well, you can fill in some of the places.
But I can give the brief outline of how it all works tomorrow. And today, well, perhaps we'll talk a little bit more about it during the course of this conversation with you.
Well, I hope so, because we have an hour to fill. So
there's no problem.
And if you've got all that information and knowledge, and only an hour tomorrow night at the library, you can share a lot of that with us today. So I was reading parts of your book, and the human being goes back almost a million years.
Well, we talk about human evolution and our origins. Darwin first speculated that human origins would be found to be in Africa. Of course, that created a lot of sensation at the time, and a lot of opprobrium. He got attacked a lot for that idea. But he said, yeah, we find chimpanzees in Africa, we find gorillas in Africa, and human beings and gorillas and chimpanzees all seem to be coming from the same basic ancestor, which of course was a very outrageous thing to say, and it can be even today an outrageous thing to say. But it took a long while before we the evidence came together and we realized that indeed not only did human beings evolve in Africa, but we are all descended from a group of people who lived very recently in Africa, in the savannas of East Africa, just 2,000 or 3,000 generations ago. So in terms of, if it's any consolation to anybody, we're still living in the same bodies and brains as back then. You know, that was our Eden, if you like, our Garden of Eden, was the savannas of East Africa, and we haven't changed really since then.
We haven't evolved? The brain hasn't evolved? The human hasn't evolved?
No, this is the interesting thing. We haven't. There's very little evolutionary time for it to happen. And there's been, around the edges, there's been little bits of evolution. You know, people cite, people from Northern Europe have become lactose tolerant to some extent, but it's only to some extent, and many aren't. And as we get older, the tolerance becomes intolerance again. And so yes, I mean, to all intents and purposes, we're living with the same basic model, you know, and some of the trimmings might have changed on the outside since then, but basically underneath we're still the same basic model.
So what was the basic, I like the word fueling rather than food and eating and meals and all that type of thing, because we do need to fuel our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Well,
just like animals, we all need fuel. Cars.
Well, exactly. And these people, of course, when we think back to that time, were living the typical hunter-gatherer existence. And we've kind of got an image in our minds of what that was like, how these peoples would be living out there in nature, living with very little shelter and camping for a while in one place and then wandering, doing their foraging and maybe some scavenging and maybe some hunting. And the men would do a little bit of hunting. They weren't always very successful at it. And setting traps, that kind of thing. The women would be doing foraging too, collecting the nuts, the berries, and all that sort of thing. And we can put together a kind of specification of what the basic fundamental fuel profile looked like, so that we can now try and emulate that same profile in today's world. And the good news is it is actually quite easy to do. You just have to know what the profile is you're trying to fit to.
And can you share what that profile is, or do we have to go to the library? Now, everyone listening can't make it to the library tomorrow night. Julie, you don't have enough room.
No. We only have about 90 seats.
So for those special 90 people, can you share a little bit with the thousands of others that are out here today listening to you?
Well, some of it isn't a big mystery, because you'll have been hearing health professionals talking about some things that we ought to be shifting towards doing a great deal, like eating more salads, eating more vegetation, plant food, eating more kinds of fruits. Yes, but certainly animal matter, and I deliberately use a vague term because these people were eating caterpillars and tortoises and snakes and lizards and things like that, as well as eating an antelope or eating a, but they'd also be eating the blood, the brains, the guts of the antelope. Now, people, you know, sometimes say, well, I wouldn't fancy that. But in fact, if you're eating the average hamburger, you're probably getting quite a bit of those sorts of things too. That's the focus. What is not in there is the key to the thing, really. The key to the thing is that we don't eat dairy. I mean, that's not human food, basically. It's animal food of various kinds, unless you go in for drinking human milk, and there are some people who do that. But even human milk isn't right for humans after the age of about 3 or 4 years old. And I suppose the big change occurred about 10,000 years ago, 11,000 years ago, when human beings, instead of just wandering around and taking their chances as to what they would find, they actually took control of the food supply and they planted. And this was the famous farming revolution. But it was at that time that all kinds of new food groups came into the food supply, which weren't necessarily very good for us. And so one of the other big ones that came into the food supply in a big way, and which isn't good for us, is grass seed, which we more commonly known as grains or cereals. So I talk a bit about that, what's wrong with them and why they're not human food. In fact, I call them bird seed.
So basically it's green foods. I mean, we've been hearing that a lot.
Yes, and it's an interesting thing. I think it was Bismarck who said you shouldn't see laws being made or sausages being made because it's so ugly. But one of the things that the USDA does is every 5 years brings out new dietary guidelines for Americans. And they've just brought out a brand new one, 2015 to 2020. They've shifted away a little bit from where they were trying to prescribe, how you'd eat, how much of this and how much of that, to saying shifting to this kind of thing. They talk very interestingly about you eat nutrient-dense foods, and that's a kind of code for eating coloured vegetables, coloured salads, and not eating grains, which are actually micronutrient-poor. They're not nutrient-dense, but they don't say that. And when I say you don't want to see the USDA regulations or the guidelines being made, it's because they're really a pretty ugly compromise between all the competing interests, and they're not really the best advice that scientists would give. In fact, it's been negotiated after the scientists have prepared their recommendation and then negotiated with all the interest groups afterwards. But nevertheless, if anybody follows those USDA guidelines, in my view, they would still be doing a lot better than the average American would do if they followed that. And that, as I say, is interesting. They are focusing very much on nutrient-dense foods now.
Do you think the government has a place in telling people how to eat?
Well, you give the government so much power, and in particular, we're starting to just get into an area where, of course, as an Englishman, I shouldn't perhaps be opining.
No, I like the outsider's view.
opining about what's going on in America. But as a general point of view, I mean, we suffer this particularly in Europe and in the UK, where we have a national health system where it's free at the point of use. You know, if you're sick, you just go to hospital, go to a doctor, and they treat you, and you don't pay any money, you don't show any insurance certificate or anything. The only thing is, of course, that when something's free, there's never an ending demand for it. And of course, it all comes out of taxation. Now,
so that's not free.
So the other, well, it's not free in that sense. No, of course not. It's taxpayers, and of course, an awful lot of these people who get it free aren't taxpayers. But that's by the by. But the mechanism is this: that since we pay the taxes, and the government is forcing us to pay the taxes, then they have a say in whether or not people are healthy or not, because they're then having to fork out the money to pay for you. And so, you know, we've given up, if you like, the opportunity to say to the government, hey, you know, stop, don't tell us how we should be eating, because they're saying, well, look, you're costing us money by being overweight or having these various diseases, which you should be able to somehow take control of for yourself. And there is a little bit of a movement now coming along, because we realise we just can't afford our health systems. It's the same in France and Germany and elsewhere, that people just have to take charge of their own health rather more. But how we get from here to there is a huge political hot potato, and I don't know the answer.
Well, Felina, maybe that's where you come in a little bit. Felina is a spiritual life coach, but she does much more than that, so... You're helping people make better choices. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mel, for having me on again. It's really a privilege to be here with you guys today. And fantastic book, by the way, Deadly Harvest. Really, really cool.
Thank you,
so looking forward to jumping into that. And I really love what what the discussion is really around today. And one of the things that I notice people come to me in my coaching practice is they know what to do. We all know we need to diet to eat more healthy green vegetables. We all know that organic is better than non-organic. We all have a sense that moving our bodies is beneficial. The difficulty is you know what to do, but you just can't seem to do it. And what I love to do with people who come to me as private coaching clients and to my classes is really work with them on developing small, sustainable practices in their lives that they can build on. So one of the core principles, for example, of making these kinds of changes that Jeff is talking about is also community. And one of the things I think we can all talk about in evolutionary terms, you know, fueling was done in community. And, you know, I love the title of your program here, which is about breaking bread, which really implies community. And so we need community support for how we live. And what's really wonderful about the people that come to me as private coaching clients is we work together as a small little micro community to support those changes around healthy lifestyle. So they're small, sustainable changes. You know, one of the things I'm always fascinated by, it's January, you know, people are in, I've got to make a change, I've got to make a resolution, you know, this is the year I'm going to do it. You know, we get all really serious about it. And my commitment in my coaching practice, for example, is I won't work with you unless you'll commit to working at least for 12 weeks with me, because I do not believe that sustainable lifestyle changes like the kind Jeff and you are both talking about can happen overnight. And we do a disservice to people when we talk about doing, you know, doing the master cleanse and that will solve all your problems. For some people, you know, for some people, for a boost, that's wonderful. But we're talking about sustainable lifestyle changes that you can incorporate into the way you are living and continue to build on those building blocks rather than, you know, going a shift from, you know, how many of us have done that? Like, you know, you binge on cheeseburgers and then the next day you're eating just lettuce. You know, we've all done that. And it's kind of crazy making over time. And eventually you kind of get to the point where you realize that that's not sustainable. And that's not something that you can build a life around. And so what's really exciting is taking the information that people like Jeff are bringing to the table and is helping people define it for their own lives on a day, moment by moment, day by day basis. So it, you know, it doesn't mean never having a cheeseburger again, not to pick on the poor cheeseburger, but let's just say for the sake of argument, it's not to never have a poor cheeseburger again, but it's to say, how can we build other practices in your life to include the good things, nutrition, the good green, leafy vegetables, the sunshine, the exercise, the being in community with others, that is going to nourish you as well. And I think that that's a really juicy and fun topic.
And you do have a class coming up tonight, as a matter of fact.
I do, actually.
Great timing.
Yeah, no. timing is always perfect, Mel. I actually have a class tonight at 7 o'clock on food, weight, and body image issues. And it's open to the public. You can find out about it at felinadenalis.com/offerings. And it's a class that focuses on incorporating mindfulness into our relationship with food. Because what's really wonderful, I'm hearing about the work that these evolutionary nutritionists have done, is they're telling us what our genes are designed for. And what we do in classes and in group coaching and individual coaching is really try to create a microculture so that your environment is also supporting you, right? Because we all know that we have, you know, we operate through genes and the environment. And so what coaching is really, I'm trying to do with people is to help them develop a micro environment in their own lives so they can make the kinds of changes that we know we want to see.
Great. Well, we're going to be back with more on this fascinating conversation with Jeff and Felina, and Julie will be telling us what's happening at the Palm Springs Public Library right after this short break.
Would you like the security of a 30-year fixed rate mortgage refi with our lowest payment possible, all without paying closing costs? Well, Cash Call Mortgage has a 30-year rate special starting at a rate so low, our lawyer won't let us say it on the radio. So call and find out how much this 30-year rate will cut your monthly payment while still knocking down your current loan balance. And the best part of all is the rate is fixed. The lawyer's right. It's a little complicated to explain on the radio. So call 855-875-CASH to find out how it works.
What? You'll cut my payment with no fees of any kind and my balance will still go down?
Yep. Paying an interest rate below 3% really makes a big difference. To find out how big, just call 855-875-CASH. That's 855-875-CASH to slice your monthly payment now.
Impact Mortgage Corp. DBA Cash Call Mortgage. One City Boulevard, Orange, California, 92868. Equal housing lender. Call 855-657-9910 for licensing terms and restrictions. NMLS 128231. Offer for first mortgage.
That's 855-875-CASH.
Get to know the VFW. Enjoy music, food, beverage, and silent auction at a special reception sponsored by Cambria of Palm Desert. Michael Pearson, past VFW commander and general manager of the Patton Memorial Museum, will share the VFW story. Mingle with VFW members at the beautiful Cambria Gallery on Cook Street. All proceeds from the silent auction will benefit VFW Post 3699. Join us January 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Cambria Gallery, 42210 Cook Street, Palm Desert. The event is free. For more information, visit VFW Post 3699indio.com. Oriental Heritage, a California corporation investing in high-quality Chinese arts and antiques, is conducting a two-day buying event Wednesday and Thursday, January 20th and 21st at the Hyatt Palm Springs, which means you can get paid for your Chinese antiques. The Chinese antiques market is thriving, and your Chinese art and antiques could be worth thousands of dollars. Now is your chance to maximize the cash value of your antiques. The Oriental Heritage staff is highly trained and successful in evaluating Chinese antiques, which means Oriental Heritage can offer you the most competitive market price for your antiques. If you have Chinese antiques to sell, attend this two-day buy-in event Wednesday or Thursday, January 20th or 21st at the Hyatt Palm Springs from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Free parking and our experts will provide free appraisals. Space is limited. To learn more and to reserve your appraisal time, visit selltooriental.com. That's selltooriental.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Breaking Bread. I'm Mel, and that was our dear friend, Glenn Frey. I think we're all a little bit sadder today to hear the news that he passed away, and our thoughts and prayers go out to his family and friends, and he gave us some great music and great memories, and the music shall live on. So thank you, Glenn. And joining us in studio today is Jeff Bond, who is the author of Deadly Harvest, and again, will be appearing at the Palm Springs Public Library tomorrow night. You can see him in person, and I think you'll find him very fascinating, and that talk begins at 6:30. And also joining us is Felina Denalis, who is a special life coach and a friend, and I'm happy she's here joining us, and she's got a class tonight about mindfulness, and we'll talk more about that. And also Julie Warren, who does some fantastic things at the Palm Springs Library. It's nice to see you, Julie.
Thank you, Mel. I appreciate you having us here.
Well, and you're the one that brought Jeff to town.
Yes, we
to speak.
Are. Yeah, we're excited. I mean, there's so many different topics and things going on, and we try to stay on top of it. We get feedback from people who come to our programs to see what they want to hear about. And with all this discussion about wheat belly and paleo diet and all these different things, Jeff's book really spoke to that topic. I was able to meet him last year, and when I was booking programs for this season, I thought he's the perfect person to bring back and have speak at the library. So we're excited to have him tomorrow night.
Fantastic. And what else? Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I say it's terrific to be able to come here and spread the knowledge a little bit too. It's and I would just like to say that in that last segment when we talked to Felina, and she was talking about life coach and living this, how to transition from what I talk about to actually doing what I talk about. And this is where I'm grateful for people like for Felina to come along and, as it were, provide the environment in which people can then make those changes, because that's the hardest hurdle of the lot. It's all very well knowing what you have to do, but you just can't do it. And being part of a social group that's all trying to do the same thing is not only makes good sense, it's actually how hunter-gatherers did it too. They would live in these little groups and they'd all have the same habits and all share and work on each other, and that social connectedness was a vital part of the good mental health. To some extent, we've lost quite a bit of that social connectedness. We're all kind of atomized into different parts of the, you know, physically we're just not in contact with each other in the same kinds of way. And so I think this is a very good good way of doing things.
Great. Well, speaking of that, I mean, they were community. They had their meals together.
Mm-hmm.
There was no TV, you know.
Absolutely.
Everyone got together at the same time and mm-hmm. ate. That was how I grew up, but that certainly has changed. Yeah. There's a lot of people that eat on their laps in front of the TV every night, and they're alone.
Well, I think, you know, sometimes I say we go back 2,000-3,000 generations to see how people live, but actually you just have to go back to our childhoods to see how people live, just back to the time of our grandparents. And the change that's happened just in our lifetime, or my lifetime at any rate, is extraordinary, and mostly for the worse. But the good news is, when you know what you have to do, you can still profit from everything that's going on here. You know, the fact that food is now available everywhere from all over the world, you can actually pick and choose perhaps more easily. I was brought up in wartime Britain when we were all on rations. Well, funnily enough, we were actually one of the healthiest generations because everything that was bad for you was rationed, and Brussels sprouts and turnips were off ration, and you could eat as much as you liked. So, yes, there is a little bit of a message there that sometimes we just have to think back what it was like for our grandparents back in the 50s, 60s. Not ideal, but nevertheless a lot better.
And if I can just add on to that, Mel, what I really love about that, it gets at the heart of how important community is for us and how we look to cultures. You know, we talk about the Mediterranean diet, for example. You know, Jeff and I both know quite a bit about that, having lived in that part of the world. We talk about the Mediterranean diet, and such a big part of that is the community component and the social component. And what's really powerful is helping people recognize that on an individual level, your choices are affecting your entire community. I know that in Palm Springs, for example, sustainability is a really big issue. We're very interested in environmental sustainability. And what's really beautiful about what Jeff is talking about in our conversation today is we make sustainable changes in community. And otherwise, they don't really stick. And so part of getting support through others and through talking about these issues with others is by giving us kind of the power to harness the collective rather than just the individual. Because we all recognize what happens is we're spending all too much time on our cell phones. We're all by ourselves way too much. We tend to eat junk food in front of the television. This is not a mystery. You know, this is exactly what Jeff is talking about. You know, this is not how our grandparents lived. And there is a space and there's an opportunity for individual, personal, radical personal responsibility. And when you live mindfully and you do a practice such as mindfulness, for example, which sometimes is a little woo-woo for some people, but, you know, I basically think it's basically about being mindful of what you're putting into your body and how you're nourishing yourself. One of the exciting things that's going on in Palm Springs is I'm seeing, you know, so many different movements arising, like, you know, organic wines, for example, are being offered. You know, companies are starting that are, you know, doing food catering, for example. Nourish Foods is a company that uses only healthful, fresh, organic food, for example. And those companies that are in the local community, local Palm Springs companies, are helping to create a spiral upward of sustainability that doesn't just affect our personal lives, but affects our communities. And I think that's really important to keep in mind as well.
Well, and definitely we see the library as a piece of that puzzle, because today's library is really a community gathering space. And that's why we have these lectures and we bring in all these different guest speakers. It's not only a place where you're going to find knowledge, of course. You know, we have books, we have CDs, we have all the stuff where you can research and find out information. But then you can share with each other. And when you gather for these different topics and come to lectures or come to classes, we have all sorts of different things going on where you can, you know, touch base with your community and really kind of learn off of each other. So definitely, it's an exciting time, I think.
Yeah. And that's really one of the exciting things just to say about Palm Springs is that we're a small community, and initiatives like what the library is doing, what Jeff is talking about, what your show is talking about today, really can have an impact because it's a small scale, and that's really powerful.
Yeah, I think what you're saying about also coming at it from different angles is important. I remember I first spoke in Palm Springs about 20 years ago, and I addressed the audience and I said, look, what you're going to hear today is going to be a surprise to you, but it'll be a commonplace in 20 years' time. Well, it's still not a commonplace, but it's getting closer. But just like the dangers of smoking are a commonplace today, and that was 20 years ago, whereas previously it was thought even to be good. Doctors would be handing out cigarettes, saying, oh, this will clear your lungs out, sterilize them, and so on. So there's been a reversal on that. And now what we're finding is that people come to me. They did find my message a little bit way off or out of off the wall. But they come to me now and say, yeah, I read an article here, or I heard somebody else speak, or I did this, did that. And now I understand, you know, now I'm kind of convinced. And so I think they need to have the reinforcement from several different angles to also be convinced that this is the right way to be going, and then of course they need the transition to what Felina's doing to actually do it.
Well, everything starts small, nothing starts big.
Yeah,
and it just takes time and more people, and it's amazing how, I don't want to say it's a fad, but how changes occur. It takes a village, and little by little things get changed. I mean, who would have thought 20 years ago that no one would be smoking inside, outside?
True.
You know, you're like in the hinterlands now. Get out of here. And the other thing that's been, you know, that I've thought about for a long time, and I wouldn't even hear anybody talk about it, is I'd be driving around because one of the biggest industries in this valley is farming. I mean, it's a fertile place. There's tons and tons of land. But the farms have been going away. They're shrinking. They're building housing developments on them. And I'm thinking, we're bringing more and more people into this country, yet we have less and less land to grow food. How are we all going to eat?
Well, that's a big question. Sometimes people say to me, yes, but if everybody ate the way you say, we couldn't feed the world. Well, that is a questionable assertion, but the short answer is, well, yes, we're talking about eating a lot of this plant food, and it requires much more acreage to do so, rather than churning out corn in the Corn Belt and or soybeans and this kind of thing. So it's a valid question. I wouldn't get alarmed about it, is my take on it, but yeah, we need to be thinking about it. I mean, the fact that the desert can be made to bloom here in the Palm Springs and, of course, the whole of Central Valley, I think is pretty remarkable. It's just the incredible productivity of it. And one has to wonder if that couldn't be repeated in other parts of the world or in other parts of the United States, for that matter. So I don't think it's imminent, a crunch. But what I do say to people, well, yes, try and save the world by all means, but first of all, save your own health and then work out how to save the world.
Well, one of the things we've talked about at the library, we've had several different speakers come and speak about urban farming and just what you could do in your own space, in your mm-hmm. own, you know, replace your lawn with, you know, food that grows and things yeah. like that. And I think that goes to your point of, you know, think about your own health, think about what you can do for yourself first. And then I think it's sort of, you know, we'll expand and again, this whole idea of community, you know, if you're starting to do that and you see your neighbors do that, and then there's a movement in your community and then bigger and bigger and so on. So I think it talks to some of those issues too.
And just to add on that too, what I love so much about that is that it's really recognizing that it's at some level, we kind of want somebody to tell us what to do and to be our boss. And at another level, we really have to accept radical personal responsibility for our own lives and have really sovereignty for our own lives and for our own health and what we put into our bodies and how we live our lives and how we choose to do that. And when you consider the impact that can have on the world when it's multiplied, it's very powerful. It's not a negligible contribution. You know, I started my career working in international development. In fact, I'd worked at the World Bank, and I had this vision as a young person, I'm going to go save the world, you know, and it was great. And, you know, I was traveling internationally and doing really interesting work. And what was frustrating about that, though, was not seeing the impact on one person's life. Mm. You know, I never got to look at somebody's face whose life had been directly impacted by the work that we were doing collectively, even though a lot of resources was going into that work. And so what's really fascinating is watching as people are really kind of getting onto the message that I fortunately got, which is that all change is individual change. And as we work on accepting personal responsibility in a really harmonious kind of way, because this is how our ancestors have been living, we can have a really much better impact on the world from that perspective than from telling other people what to eat.
or not to eat. Don't eat this, don't eat that.
It comes back to, well, it was a question I asked. I serve on the health panel of a think tank in Britain called Reform. And it comes back to a question I asked in the panel. I said, look, we know that most of the diseases today are lifestyle diseases, and that really we need to somehow get control of that. Whereas we're talking the whole time about how we fund the health service, how we fund mm-hmm. fixing the fire brigade rather than fixing the people who are setting the fires. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, what do you think we can do about that? And they thought for a bit and they said, well, only one person wanted to answer, really. And he said, well, all I can say is that we'd have to do draconian government regulations, a bit like how we did for smoking and a bit like for seatbelts. And I added, yeah, a bit like when in wartime rationing, when you actually were given ration books and you're told what you could eat. And now I don't ever see us doing that. But coming back to that whole notion is that, yes, in that time, we're all in it together. You know, we were fighting a war, and part of fighting the war was getting our food supply sorted, and we were digging for victory. So we turned our lawns over into growing
victory gardens.
And we would all have our little allotment, which was a place, a field that had been carved up into little plots that we could go and grow more vegetables or keep chickens on. And I believe the Germans even had something similar called a Schreiber garden. So, yeah, I mean, in a way, it's a question of rowing back a little bit from the idea that the convenience of foods, and we should be more in contact with, responsible for our own food supply, just that little bit. And in a sense, you know, seeing the consequences of the drought in Southern California, and now all the moves to digging up the grass. I see the grass verges here in Palm Springs are all gone brown. And the move to putting in desert planting is a kind of shift in ideas about this, a shift in ideology, I think. So maybe that'll stick long enough for people to think more about growing something useful with their gardens than cactuses.
All right. Well, we're going to be back with more on this fascinating subject and change in our lives after the short messages.
The Wednesday night classic Hollywood movie on the Valley's biggest screen at the Camelot Theaters kicks off its 2016 season on Wednesday, January 20th. Two mid-century icons, Burt Lancaster and Katharine Hepburn, star in Rainmaker. Showtime's 8 p.m., the Camelot Cafe opens at 5 with happy hour prices at the bar and their special $15 prefix dinner menu. The classic Hollywood movies are brought to you by Aloha Bin Cleaning and their curbside eco-safe cleaning system. Enjoy safe, clean, and regularly disinfected trash bins just for pennies a day. Check their website, AlohaBinCleaning.com. For details.
When you need heating and air conditioning system work in a hurry,
call the General.
When you want the job done right the first time,
call the General.
You bet. General Air Conditioning and Heating is the best little air conditioning company in the desert. Get a Service Plus agreement and you'll always get a discount on parts and labor and priority service too. So if you really want one less thing to worry about,
call the General and that's in order.
General Air Conditioning and Heating, 760-343-7488 or log on to callthegeneral.com.
We're excited at General Air Conditioning and Plumbing as we start 2016. Hello, Frank Harrison, President of General Air and Plumbing. We look forward to being your service company of choice for air conditioning, plumbing, drain cleaning, water purification, and indoor air quality. Why not call the General? We're open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. with no overtime. We also offer 24-hour emergency service. Check us out at callthegeneral.com or give us a call at 760-343-7488.
Each franchise, independently owned and operated, offer good on selected product at participating franchises only. Some restrictions may apply.
Okay, so I really think you're going to love this house. It just came on the market, and it's gorgeous inside. Here we are. Oh my gosh, it's stunning. Look at this room. The blinds and drapes on the windows, the rug, the pillows. It's straight out of a magazine.
Isn't it incredible? Want to know the best part? They didn't even hire a decorator. Budget Blinds did it all without the designer fees.
Budget Blinds?
Yep, Budget Blinds. They can transform any room in a snap. You can get professional design advice and an in-home consultation. They even do all the measuring and installation. You don't have to lift a finger.
I'll take it.
The house?
No, the number for Budget Blinds.
Budget Blinds has more window fashions than ever before. During our drapery event, we have many amazing drapery promotions like upgrades, discounts, and more. Contact your local Budget Blinds style consultant to find out about incredible offers in your area. Call 1-800-460-6242 today. That's 1-800-460-6242. 1-800-460-6242.
And welcome back to Breaking Bread on this Tuesday afternoon. Joining me in studio today is Jeff Bond, who is the author of Deadly Harvest. And again, he will be at the Palm Springs Public Library tomorrow night at 6:30. Make sure you get there. Julie, first come, first serve for the seats.
That's correct. First come, first seated until we're full.
And also joining us is Felina Denales, who is a life coach. And one of the things that we haven't talked about, which probably is the most important, is that five-letter word beginning with an S.
Stress.
No, I'm talking about a food. Well, it's not even a food, but sugar.
Okay. Which is stressful. That one.
And it isn't really a food, is it?
Well, I'll be talking a little bit about stress and sugar tomorrow.
Well, just give us a little today. Just the sweet part.
but yes, sugar is being demonized today, in my view, quite rightly, because it has taken a proportion of the diet that, it's just escalated exponentially just in the last 200 years. From being close to something like 4 or 5 pounds per head per year of sugar, or in those days it would have been honey, £4 or £5 per head per year, up to something like £150 per head per year. Now, that is the difference between something that the body likes and uses and something that the body can't cope with, and it crashes the body. And in fact, hunter-gatherers did indeed eat honey when they could get it. They liked it, but it was tough to find, and they had to fight off the African wild killer bees to do so. And but they would be eating the equivalent of a couple of teaspoons, 3 teaspoons a day, perhaps something like that. But it would tend to be more in a bunch once or twice a week or 3 times a week. But the basic message is yes, the demonization of sugar is well placed. And we'd all do well to get the sugar out of the diet. And that is a nettle that the USDA yet again couldn't grasp when it came to give its recommendations. You know, you see as I alluded to, the way laws are being made. I followed the making of the 2005 and the 2010 guidelines, and it wasn't an edifying sight to see the complaints coming from the various vested interests saying, look, if you demonize sugar, look at all the jobs that would be lost and agriculture will be decimated and so on. So there's a lot of pressure. And so the USDA, it backs off every time from making a real outright recommendation. It just simply says, well, try to keep it down to 10% of calories, which sounds pretty innocuous, but actually that's a lot more than people should be eating.
Well, there was a great book out, I think it was, what was it, The Sugar Blues? Anybody familiar with that?
Yeah.
And people don't realize how it can affect your moods.
Absolutely.
Not just your body and your physical health, but also your mental health.
Yeah. Can I tell a quick story, Mel? So sugar is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. It's probably the reason I'm a coach now, because my relationship with sugar was just so toxic throughout my entire life. And I remember sitting in business meetings I was in Washington. There's all these brilliant people around me, and we're talking about really important issues. And there would be a plate of donuts on the table, and I could not concentrate, because I would eat one and then I would start thinking about getting the next one. And then I would start thinking about, where are they going to move them into the break room next? Like, where are they going? Where are they taking the sugar next? And it was really, it became really toxic. And, you know, for some people, and I'm definitely one of them, you know, sugar is as addictive as other substances are. And so, you know, there's a lot of support available for people who need help around that. You know, there's therapy, there's 12-step groups, there's all kinds of support around that. But like, don't underestimate the power of sugar to make people crazy. And, you know, the massive mood swings that you would see is directly a result of a lot of sugar. And I think one of the most interesting things that Jeff's talking about, and about the demonization of sugar being well placed, is we know a lot of this information. We know a lot of this information, and it's so vital for us to get support around it. We all know that ho-hos aren't good for us, you know, sorry, but you know, we know that. The challenge
Jeff
is...
Jeff probably doesn't know what ho-hos
you don't
are.
Know what, do you know what a ho-ho is? Yeah, it's,
no, I'm afraid
yeah,
not.
It's an American delight. I've had more than my fair share in my youth. But the point is that we want to take the steps, and what the library is doing and what you're doing with your program is really trying to create a culture where we can talk about the toxicity of some of these products that are really not nutrients in our systems, and how they affect the rest of our lives in terms of, you know, our well-being, in terms of our relationships. You know, I mean, have you ever been in a situation where you had a box of chocolates and your loved one came in the room and you hid the box of chocolates? You know, I mean,
my sister used to hide the Rice Krispie treats that she would make under her bed.
Right.
So, yeah.
Exactly. So talking about it, and what we're all doing is we're raising public awareness about this issue, that it's not something to be taken lightly. It's serious, and changes can be made.
Yeah, it's good to be able to make an environment safe to talk about these things, because otherwise, up till now, people are a little frightened to admit or to talk about these things or to show what they're doing. And bit by bit, to make it safe to talk about it and to admit, yeah, I'm trying to keep off sugar. Sorry about the chocolates, honey. Is something that's legitimate to say. So yes, it's a whole environment that's got to shift, and it's going to take a long time. Yeah.
Well, this is how sad it is really for us as Americans, because most kids, like when they're tiny little babies, at least in our generation, my generation, oh honey, you don't, that something hurt, oh here, have a cookie. You went to the doctor, have a lollipop. You know, oh, you were good, you didn't cry when you got your it was always rewarded with sugar. So there's a real psychological issue as well as a physical issue attached to sugar. Felina.
Yeah, this is an issue near and dear to my heart, especially. And what's really interesting is, you know, I was talking to a client recently, and she was talking about her treats, you know, and the treats that even though she wanted to get off sugar, she was talking about how, you know, what am I going to have for a treat in my life? And one of the things that I do with my coaching clients, and you can find out more on my Facebook page, which is Spiritual Fitness Coaching LLC. I try to give people tips and strategies for developing other types of treats in their lives. And one of them, for example, is rest. I know it sounds like ridiculous. Well, it can sound ridiculous to some people, but just giving yourself 10 minutes to rest can be such a reset button. Because what we do is we give ourselves those treats when we're tired. You know, at 4 o'clock, I mean, I've been there, you know, you're in the office, right? You're at your desk and it's like, oh God, I got another hour or two. How am I going to make it? And you go down to the candy machine and that's your treat to get through a difficult rest of the afternoon.
That's true.
And so one of the strategies that I try to work with people is how can we develop other nourishing treats for you in your life. So taking, even doing something like a small meditation, I know that that's out of the, you know, there's some on my website, felinadenalis.com, if anybody's interested in starting a basic meditation practice, but there's tons of other ones that are available out there to give you practice and just being still, you know, and not running around. Because people talk about taking a coffee break. You know, I back in the day, I used to smoke. And what I loved about it was going outside the building and smoking with other people and being in community with others. And so it would be really great if our culture evolved to a point where we could have like meditation breaks or real rest breaks where we could actually nourish ourselves rather than needing sugar and other toxic substances to kind of stay high all day.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to interject. I'm married to a woman, been married about 20 years, who's a human dynamo and doesn't like to stop too much. Incidentally, though, she's totally on my program now. We fought a lot, but she's totally on my program now. To the point where she's actually written a cookbook called Paleo Harvest to match what I talk about. But she would walk into the room, bustling about, and she'd see me sitting down in the chair, not just staring into space. And I'm not meditating or anything. She'd ask, have you got anything to do? And I said, well, I'm just on standby. Now, that's all I could say to express it. But what you're saying is actually, yes, it is vital to zone out from time to time. It triggers other brain circuits in the brain, electrical circuits in the brain, which normally don't come through unless you're zoned out, but which are a vital part of cleaning and sorting out other aspects of good mental health. So yes, zoning out, meditation, whatever you like to call it, where you're not really thinking about anything for just 10 minutes and you just choose your moment and just do that, then that is a good, healthful thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing too, even with sugar, it's because I find that most of us are reactionary people until we learn how to act. And sort of that's what you're helping people to do, Felina, is act rather than react. You know, that if I had a sugar craving and I can just center myself for 30 seconds and do whatever I need to do or whatever I choose to use, that craving goes away.
And that's really where the whole piece of mindfulness and getting clear about your values is really important too. You know, I know we're talking about food and kind of the broader implications of food and lifestyle and through the work that Jeff has done and creating communities to support those kinds of changes. And what's interesting is being mindful about what your own individual values are. So if you've got the chocolate bar in front of you and you start shaming yourself so that you don't eat the chocolate bar, that's probably, you know, maybe it'll work in the short term. But my experience, based on what I've seen in my own life and in other people, is that it doesn't create long-term possibilities for positive, sustainable change. What does change that, though, is beginning a practice of looking at your whole life. You know, like I love what Jeff was saying about the zoning out, and I'm a big fan of zoning out. The busier you get in your life, the more time you need to have for zoning out, because that's really where you integrate the changes that you're making. And if you're making radical changes with your food and lifestyle, you need time to integrate those. And so walking away, you know, so when the chocolate presents itself or when that 3 o'clock hour presents itself, what can you do instead? You know, this is what I work with people on an individual level, is like, what can we do instead when those cravings come up, rather than turn to the easy solution? How can we build other practices, and also connect it to what your values are? So if you don't want to eat the chocolate bar because you don't want to be fat, that's one thing, because that, you know, that's sometimes, you know, pride in your appearance, vanity. Okay, that's one thing. But if you don't want to eat it because you don't want to die and not hang out with your grandkids, that's a different set of values, and that's a different set of incentives. And my sense is that when people are really in alignment with their values, their choices when it comes to food and other lifestyle behaviors becomes much, much easier. It's not as much work.
Great. Julie, we're almost out of time. So what else do you have coming up at the library in the next couple months? Because I know this is the season where have all sorts of good things.
Yeah, we have quite a variety of programs, of course. Everything can be found on our website at palmspringslibrary.org/calendar. So we keep everything updated there. But we have great topics coming up. We have other health topics. Later in January, on the 27th, we have someone coming from Eisenhower Medical to talk about osteoporosis and those things to be aware of, how to prevent it, what medications maybe that you need to consider, lifestyle changes, as we're kind of talking about here, because all things are connected. We also are super excited to have Michael Childers coming on Saturday, January 30th at the library at 2:30. He's going to talk about his book, Icons and Legends, and his photography, tell us kind of all the behind-the-scenes stories there. We have programs at the Wellwood Murray Memorial Library downtown Palm Springs, too. And one of the things coming up there, we're going to do a local author showcase on Thursday, January 28th, at 6 to 8:30 during Village Fest. And so we're just going to highlight several different local authors and their books and so many different things. So definitely check out the library. If you're looking for something to do, we have nature lectures, we're screening films, we're having all sorts of different historical topics and things like that. So come check us out at palmspringslibrary.org.
Thank you, Julie. And you do a great job over there. I know you've got some kids programs in the summer.
Oh,
and
we do.
The reading program and
yes,
the spring festival that you also
have. Oh, yes. Thank you. Family Fun Fest is coming March 23rd. It's a Wednesday. So in the morning, 10:30 to 12:30, it's in the Palm Springs Stadium. All sorts of different community groups and organizations are joining us. We take over the stadium and we have a fun morning focused on families and kids and things going on there. So Family Fun Fest is coming.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We shall be there. And Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today. We barely touched on what you do. I didn't want to take it all for, leave something for tomorrow night.
Thank you. There's a lot more on my website, www.naturaleater.com. I will be addressing osteoporosis as well tomorrow evening, just to give the lifestyle aspect of it. Because it is
we didn't even get into that part today.
So. We didn't do it, but it's a lifestyle disease along with all the others. Not go for medications personally, so everything's there on my website, www.naturaleater.com, and the events there as well, just in case you miss it on the public library website.
Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back and join us again another time.
Look forward to doing so.
Thank you. And Felina Denalis, thank you. You have your mindfulness class tonight. Again, where is that going to happen? What time?
It's at 7 p.m. Details can be found at felinadonalis.com/offerings. It's a class on weight, food, and body image, and it's part of a 5-part series introducing people to mindfulness and group coaching activities.
Thank you all for being here. It was fascinating. I enjoyed learning. Hope you learned something today as well. And join us again next Tuesday for Breaking Bread.